This is Shirley Booth.
Bing Crosby.
Kirk Douglas.
Audrey Hepburn.
Deborah Carr.
United Nations Radio presents My Most Unforgettable Child, produced for the UN Children's Fund. Now, here is Bing Crosby.
This is the time of the year for storytelling. You sit around the fire, you stretch out your legs, take the old pipe down from the shelf, and you spin a few yarns. That's what we're going to do now. But our storytellers don't belong to the pipe and slippers group. They're men and women who go out to every corner of the world for the United Nations, trying to make life a little easier for children who have nothing. Our storytellers are the ones who bring milk and life-saving drugs and the knowledge of how to live a better life. Their passports read, Occupation UNICEF, United Nations Children's Fund. Me, you know, I've traveled a little bit too, but not their way. I can spin a few stories, but not their kind of stories. You see, they've seen a lot of children along the way. They're the kids that you and I have never met. And it's time we did, because I think you'll agree that these children are, they're pretty unforgettable. Here are true stories written by UNICEF field workers. And since our authors are in faraway places making life more livable for somebody else, the UN has asked a few friends to tell their stories. Kirk Douglas, Audrey Hepburn, Deborah Carr, Shirley Booth. One of the best doctors in the Philippines is also the prettiest. She has a pretty name, too. Sofia Bona de Santos. Doc Sofia was trained to take over tuberculosis vaccination work in the 7,000 Philippine Islands. You take the letter that Sofia received from a mother whose child's life had been saved by UNICEF. Doctor, sir, wrote the woman, excuse, I am ignorant to write, but my heart is thanking. And I think perhaps you around will be thanking, too, for the story that Doc Sofia has written, a story told for her by Deborah Carr.
His name was Ronaldo. He was 11, but barely tipped the scales at 42 pounds. He had great eyes and a tiny face, and the enlarged glands on either side of his neck emphasized his thinness even more. His older sister brought Ronaldo to our clinic in the Philippines for examination. He had been ill, intense headaches, fever, swelling of the glands at the neck. It looked like tuberculosis. Ronaldo's sister had heard of BCG, a serum we use to vaccinate children against tuberculosis, and she thought, like many other people, that it actually could cure the disease. But that is not the case. It can only prevent tuberculosis in a healthy child. With Ronaldo, it was as I expected. Any medicine, at best, would only prolong his life a short while. I treated Ronaldo as best I could. He said nothing, but his eyes talked for him. Patience and resignation were there, but not one glint of hope. The next time Ronaldo turned up at the clinic, he brought his whole family with him. His sister told me that the boy had insisted on his family being x-rayed and tested for tuberculosis. He had said to his mother, I am sick and the vaccine cannot help me, but Zenaida and Vilma maybe can get it. Vilma was suffering from primary tuberculosis, but miraculously her sister Zenaida was tuberculin negative. I don't know how she escaped. I gave her the BCG vaccination, and for the first time, I saw a flicker of a smile in Ronaldo's huge eyes. It came came time for me to go on my annual vacation. Before I left, I made a point of saying goodbye to Ronaldo. I felt I would not see him again, and I knew he felt it too. In a rare burst of words, he stammered, "Thank you, Doctor, thank you for me and Vilma and Zenaida." Zenaida returned to the clinic a year later with her father. I dreaded to ask about Ronaldo, but the father volunteered the information. Ronaldo had died a month after I had left for vacation. His mother also died 3 months later. And Zenaida? She comes regularly to the clinic for her post-BCG checkup. She is a normal, healthy, happy child, free from tuberculosis. But each time she leaves, I involuntarily glance at my file of X-rays against the wall. I can't help myself, for among them is my only keepsake of Ronaldo, an X-ray picture of classical miliary tuberculosis. I show it to the medical students sometimes. If in such moments Ronaldo is somewhere, watching me, I know there is no disapproval in his big, patient eyes.
This story is that of Dixon Hartwell. His telephone extension at UN headquarters in New York is 3374. If you dial it, he's likely to say, "Hartwell speaking, what's on your mind?" Tall, good-looking, Dixon J. Hartwell has been in practically every place where UNICEF is in action. Hartwell can write about any subject, from a dissertation on the Malthusian theory of overpopulation to My Unforgettable Child. Kirk Douglas, who could very well play Hartwell in a movie, tells us this story.
My most unforgettable child? That's a big order. You see, for the past year, I've traveled through 30 countries and seen a lot of children. But it seems to me they all have one thing in common. Whether they're in Brazil or Bangkok or Baghdad, those children are the hope of the world. This little human equation was acted out for me in the home of a rice farmer in Thailand, or Siam as it was once known. That's where I found her. My unforgettable child. They called her Noi, and she was just 5 days old. A tiny, wrinkled, yelling bundle of life, yet strangely beautiful. I went along with a nurse midwife who'd come to instruct the mother in how to care for the new baby. Barely 17 years separated the baby from the mother. She was still a girl. This mother girl received us with solemn courtesy, sitting on a floor with the grace that is only given to Eastern peoples. Her swaddled baby lay before her on the straw mat. The baby's grandmother stood over her and looked at us with reserve, edged with suspicion. Her eyes were a dark thundercloud. They told me a great deal. We weren't wanted here. But the mother girl's eyes told me a different story. She was very young, only 17, and as lovely as only 17 can be. This was her first baby, and she was filled with wonder. This tiny being was for her the wealth of all the world. Yes, she must give to Noi the best possible life. She listened intently as the nurse told her how to feed the baby, how to boil its water, how to bathe it. Then the storm struck. Grandmother suddenly spoke in an angry voice. I couldn't understand what she said, so I asked the nurse to translate it. She says it is bad luck to bathe the baby before it is 2 weeks old. The mother girl looked at the older woman. There was conflict on her brow, wrinkles of wonder, of puzzlement. Should she believe the old or the new? The grandmother spoke again. The baby should be bathed in a broth of onion rings so it can grow to have strong children. I watched the mother girl struggle. She looked up at the old woman who had raised her. Was it right to listen to this nurse who was, after all, a stranger? Were the new ways, the strange ways, best for her child? After all, she herself had always lived by the old traditional ways. The grandmother sensed the struggle and went on relentlessly. For a moment, the young girl hesitated. She carefully gathered her child into her arms, rose from the floor, and stood there. undecided. Then, slowly, shyly, she shook her head and put her child in the nurse's arms. Yes, I was there, and I saw it happen. The mother girl, lovely as a lotus blossom, seemed to unfold with the realization that in the nurse's arms lay a better chance for her baby's future.
This is Shirley Booth. Everyone knows that a wife plays an important part in the life and success of her husband, every husband. But to be married to a UN man is a job and a half. Take Lillian Ehrenstrahler, a Swedish girl who's never stopped traveling since she married Hans Ehrenstrahler, now the chief of UNICEF's Middle Eastern office. Lillian has worked right by his side, so it's not surprising that the story I'm to tell you was written by Lillian, accompanied by a note that said, Hans agrees, this is our unforgettable child. On the very cold Christmas Eve of 1947, my husband and I were on our way to an orphanage a few miles south of Warsaw. The place was an estate which once belonged to a wealthy person. Now it was a home for 32 orphans. Once it had been a big, beautiful park. Now the trees were cut and the antique statues thrown off their posts. The mansion had been badly damaged, and the repairs could hardly keep out wind and snow. Nevertheless, Sister Ursula and her group had transformed this abandoned estate into a home for her orphans. Sister Ursula's orphanage had been kept going by a lot of people. Fruit and potatoes were given by farmers in the neighborhood. From UNICEF, the orphanage received powdered milk. This day, we had brought clothing. The packages were put in the large dining room and piled on a big oak table. A pair of shoes. A sweater. A coat. All their eyes were gleaming with happiness. What a Christmas it was for these children. And stockings and coats were tried on. Old worn-out clothes were changed with new ones. The number of shoes was so few that four children had to share one pair. Now the children had put on the shoes and the clothing and run out into the park. It was quiet in the room where we stood with the empty boxes in the corner. And I looked around, and under the table I noticed one shoe for the right foot. Sister Ursula picked it up and looked at me and said, this shoe belongs to Jurek. That's the Polish name for George. And then she told me the story of George.
Zaczęło się to w Warszawie w czasie ostatniej wojny, gdzie mieszkał ośmioletni Jurek ze swoją matką.
I met George in the middle of the war, Sister Ursula said, in one of the badly damaged sections of Warsaw, where most of the children had been evacuated. George was 8 years old then, and lived in a one-room apartment with his mother. His father was a soldier at the front. They didn't know where. Little George would also have been evacuated, but since his mother was alone, she'd been permitted to keep him. George spent most of his time at home, where he sat at the window dreaming. He loved birds, and his friend was a starling who came to the window each day for the crumbs he would save. The street outside was deserted of people, and there were no tramways rattling. Sometimes, during the night, George would hear loud explosions in other parts of the town. His favorite dream was of a house in the country with many trees and many, many birds, and a mother who was always happy. One evening, George was sitting in the window, waiting for mother. He saw the searchlights getting brighter, nearer. And suddenly a giant fist knocked him down on the floor. He didn't know that at that very moment, his mother was dead under tons of sand and bricks only a few blocks away. He didn't know that his father had been buried weeks before in a mass grave. Nor could he know that his little starling was crushed in the rubble. All this time, he was in his dream of a little house in the country with all the beautiful trees, listening to the birds. But when he awoke, there was a terrible pain in his right leg, and it took him a long time to realize he didn't have a right leg. He was in a big room. He was the only child. His bed was too large, and no one came to visit him. After a long time, he was allowed to get up and learned how to use a crutch. He would have been lonely in this world if it were not that Sister Ursula brought him to the orphanage. She took his mother's place, so he was not lonely anymore. And that was the story of George.
Dzisiaj prawie już nie odczuwa samotności.
Sister Ursula and I followed the children out to the terrace, and we watched them play hide-and-seek in the park with the broken fountain and the fallen statues. George stood aside from the rest, leaning against a post. He had abandoned his crutch for a moment and was watching the other children running about. We could see that his eyes were full of the wish to play with them. Was this not his dream? A house in the country, the trees, the beloved birds. In his dream, George was playing the game of hide-and-seek. He was it. He was running to find the others. And so with a cry, he jumped forward. The dream ended. He fell face forward on the ground and lay there. Slowly his hand reached out to seek the crutch. And slowly he raised up from the ground and leaned against his post. You see, George had forgotten that his wings were cut. But I've never forgotten.
This story belongs to Alice Schaefer. In a way, I'm getting a big thrill out of telling it to you, because in a way, Alice is something like me. My name is Audrey Hepburn. I've always felt a little like a walking United Nations myself. I was born in Belgium, my father is Irish, and my mother is Dutch. And I got a start in pictures in England. Anyway, this is her story, just like Alice Schaefer wrote it. One unforgettable child? No, I have six of them. Six little girls who live in Nicaragua. They gave me something I'll never forget. About a year ago, I flew down to Nicaragua. It was a wonderful day, bright, blue, sunshiny. The Minister of Health met me at the airport, and he had a twinkle in his eye. He said, "Miss Schaefer, I've a surprise for you. But we have to hurry. Can't be late." The minister was leading me through an archway into a large outdoor court. Very formally, the minister introduced me. "Boys and girls, this is Miss UNICEF in person." The children clapped and yelled and made me feel as famous as a movie star. Then six little girls walked into the court, and they each had a glass in their hand. Another little girl came out with a pitcher of milk and filled their glasses. But that wasn't all. Every child in that huge courtyard, and there were many, started to sing. It was a song they'd written especially for UNICEF. Let me try to translate it for you. "With UNICEF milk, we are so healthy, no children are dying. The devil is worried because now he doesn't get any little souls anymore." Then the Minister of Health leaned over to me. The twinkle was still there. He said, "Today is UNICEF's birthday, and we wanted to have a party. There isn't a cake with candles, but
There's something else instead. You know what I mean. I knew. I sat up a long time that night thinking. No, I can't call my job work. It's a privilege that is given to very few. The privilege of seeing six small, unforgettable faces with thank yous in their eyes.
I'm sure you must agree with me. Those kids are unforgettable, no doubt about it. But I've got an unforgettable child, too. It's a girl. Although I've never met this young lady, I'll never forget her because something she did came to me in the mail one morning. It wasn't much food, not nearly enough to go around until UNICEF came into the picture. They sent tinned meat and milk, and the kids appreciated it. When you're littler, your appetite's bigger, remember? Well, she wanted to say thank you to UNICEF for this food, so she looked around for a way to do it, and she found a way, too. At school, she sat down and she drew a picture. In one corner is the sun, great, big, bright, yellow, happy sun. In the center, there's a big maypole with lots of kids of all nationalities dancing around it, and at the top of the maypole is a wreath. Zika says this wreath means that UNICEF helps children all over the world, and this help, like the wreath, is endless. So thanks for that card, Zika, and to you and to all the children around the world, the unforgettable children. May God remember you always with health and happiness.
You have been listening to the United Nations radio production of My Most Unforgettable Child, starring Bing Crosby, Shirley Booth, Kirk Douglas, Deborah Carr, and Audrey Hepburn. This has been a story of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, whose work is made possible by voluntary contributions from over 100 countries and territories. In the UN's fight against the causes of war, disease, poverty, ignorance, hunger, UNICEF supplies are helping the children of many countries to fight tuberculosis, malaria, malnutrition. With UNICEF equipment, countries are developing their own milk plants, their own sources of DDT and penicillin to keep up the fight. UNICEF is not a charity. Governments receiving aid pay at least half the costs themselves. This year, over 30 million children are being helped, the children who will be responsible for running our world in the days ahead, who are learning through UNICEF that international cooperation can work. All names and places referred to in this program and music are authentic. The entire production by Gerald Keane of United Nations Radio.